And we're back here on Downtown's 432 and a steamy Thursday afternoon. I mean, not as steamy as it would be in a classroom today, I'm guessing. We're joined in studio by someone who can answer that question one way or the other. She is a teacher by day, an extraordinary one out at Central. And I hear that from all the people up there. They say that about you, Anne. And a very prolific author who's got a wonderful new book out called The Springs, Anne Britting Olson. Welcome.
Thank you. It's fun to be back. It's good to see you.
Nice to have you with us here today. So how hot did it get in your classroom?
Well, ostensibly just outside the window, it got to 98, but I kept the lights off, the windows closed, and the shades drawn, and we became creatures of darkness. I have to explain to young people, no, when it's 98 out there and it's 78 in here, we keep the windows closed.
Yeah. Hunker down. Do what you can.
That's right. And see if you can avoid breathing.
Yeah, that would help, too. Do you think our mutual friend might be listening this afternoon, Jim Pike?
I don't know. I hope so. But he can always listen to the replay later.
Right, absolutely. So if you're listening live, hi, Jim. If you're listening in a replay online, hi, Jim.
Love you.
Love you to pieces. Going to come visit you, but not when it's 150 degrees. I'm not very social when it's like that.
I don't think anybody is.
No. Well, let's talk about the book. It's so good. I'm from Maine, but I have to think if somebody read this book and they weren't from Maine, they would be absolutely convinced that Painter Springs is a real place. It's just such a wonderfully honest depiction of Maine small towns.
Well, it is an amalgam of three of the small towns that I have lived in. In fact, I dedicated it to the denizens of Grover's Crossing, which is a neighborhood in the town I grew up in that nobody would recognize unless they lived there. But it's also, I'm just throwing this out here, it's also the hometown of Jim Nichols, who wrote a book called Closer All the Time, who wrote a book called Blue Sunday, and both of those books have won the Maine Novel Contest in their years of publication. Hi, Jim.
Well, it's such a wonderful story about healing, about friendship, about a sense of community, and the characters there's so many of them, and yet every one of them I had to do a little chart to keep track here, but they're all so fully developed.
Well, that was actually an interesting book to be working on. I wrote the first scenes more than 30 years ago when I was, in fact, living in Stockton Springs.
Wow.
And the house I was living in is still standing, but it looks kind of a wreck. It's down on Fort Point if anybody wants to go exploring there. But the springs themselves, the granite springs, is in beautiful downtown Dixmont, where I spent the last 35 years of my life living. So I just superimposed things on my little town, things that were important to me in the places that I lived. So I made them important to my characters. But I was going to say that this is probably one of the most difficult manuscripts I've ever worked on, because it is in multiple points of view, and I have never written a book in multiple points of view.
And the central character is no longer with us in many ways, and Larry Ahern, who was killed in Afghanistan, and then how his death impacts the people of the Springs, and everybody impacted in a different way, and there's a ripple effect, and that really is, especially in small towns, the effect that lives have on so many people along the way.
It's true. His sister is the main character in the book, and she is dealing with the impact on her family. Her mother has never accepted the fact that Larry went to Afghanistan and did not come home. Another one of the main characters is a friend of Larry's who was present at Larry's death and is suffering from PTSD-induced mutism, which was in itself an adventure for researching. Fortunately, I know many, many, many speech therapists. Mm. So I got to talk to a lot of people. And because I've been a school teacher for 30-odd years, a lot of my students have gone into the service, and I was able to pump them for information about Larry's death. Got into a really interesting conversation about Donald Rumsfeld and the armored carriers that were not armored, things of that nature. So there was a lot of interesting things.
And there are a lot of wounded people in the story. You have the people you mentioned, Isabella, whose family is killed in a car crash. She is forever wounded as a result of that. And everybody dealing with wounds, both visible and invisible.
True. The relationship between Isabella and her uncle, who is unable to speak. She is unable to walk. He is unable to speak. And they are, as members of the same extended family, they are people who don't quite fit where they thought they would any longer. But they discover eventually that despite their age differences, they seem to fit together because they recognize the woundedness of one another. And my favorite part of the story is all about the 1971 Bronco. Another thing that I got to research, and what happens to it at the very, very end. Yes. At the hands of Isabella.
Yes. Yeah. And what a wonderful, solid visual thing that we can all picture that serves as the means of healing for so many people along the way.
The 1971 Bronco belonged to Larry. It was the car of his high school years. So when it's first introduced into the story, there's a lot of discussion about all the trash that's in the back seat because it's a car that belongs to a high school boy. And he and his best friend are the ones who go banging around in the small town in this Bronco. And then after Larry's death, the Bronco is the connection for so many people to Larry, their dead brother, their dead friend. And the restoration of the Bronco becomes really important to all of them.
Well, I don't want to give anything else away because I want people to read, but it's a wonderful book, The Springs. I also was amused because I know what a Red Sox fan you are, to see our friend Joe Castiglione appear in the book.
Oh, Joe. He doesn't do road trips anymore.
No,
I'm really sad about that.
No. Well, you know, he's earned that. What is Joe? He's got to be almost 80 now.
No, he is in his 80s.
Wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, there he was in the book. And
I could
certainly picture that as well. And you have been very prolific of late. You were on social media displaying pages of a new book as you lay them out and get that ready.
Yes, that is a weird trick that I have, and it grows out of being a school teacher. I have a writing class. Every single class we begin with a 10-minute free write. The kids pull a card and we have a prompt, and I write during that time with them, and the scenes that suggest themselves for the new story are not always chronological. And so when I end up with a fair body of first draft, I usually have to take all the scenes and lay them out and reorganize them. And this is something I learned from a craft book by a woman named Carolyn C. called Living the Literary Life. She does it on her dining room table. She doesn't anymore. She's dead. But she did it on her dining room table. And mine take up entire rooms.
I don't know how you find the time to do it, because teaching is not only time-consuming when you're there, but you know, there's correcting, there's preparation, and the fact that quite often at the end of a day of teaching, you're just flat-out exhausted.
Well, writing the stories is the only thing that I've ever wanted to do. Your pal Bruce can talk to this. It's the only thing I've ever wanted to do. And I learned early on that if I wanted to be a professional, I had to behave like a professional. And again, in Stephen King's craft book, he talks about putting in your 10 pages a day. I don't have time for 10 pages a day. Sorry, Steve. But I'll crank out the five, because if I want to be a professional, I have to behave like a professional. And a professional writer writes.
Did I see in the acknowledgement, too, that your students also lend a little assistance and read some of the work before you decide it's ready for the next phase?
Well, as part of that 10-minute free write at the beginning, we just do a read around, and it's not time for workshopping. It's just sharing what has come out of the prompt. And because I'm writing with them, I'm sharing with them as well. They know that I'm writing scenes for novels, and this year I have one delightful young person who has started to do that as well. She has an idea for a novel, and she takes the prompts as I take the prompts and bend them to her will. So she's been doing this as well. And so, yeah, I acknowledge them in the end, because they listen to my 100 words, and I listen to their 100 words, and we talk about things.
I love it. Well, I'm incredibly jealous, because you've got the discipline to do it that I lack, and well, and the other thing, the talent to do it that I lack.
Well, thank you for that.
The book is wonderful, and the people, can they get it? Is it locally? Has Gibran got it in stock yet?
If he doesn't have it on the shelf, he can get it quite easily.
Okay.
In fact, any small bookstore can get it very easily from either the publisher or the distributor.
Excellent.
The publisher is Encircle Publications, actually based in Farmington, though their cover designer and book designer is in Colorado, because in this age of computers, you could be anywhere darn well please.
Well, I cheated, and I went the online route, but I need to get myself a hard copy of it, though.
Well, you can. You can just go down to Gibran and you can say, can you order this for me? He can.
He can do that. And what's the new book going to be about? Can you give us a little teaser on that?
Well, the last book I actually published last year was an adventure mystery that took place, for the most part, in the city of York in the north of England.
Ah, so are you bringing back these characters?
I am bringing back those characters because Deirdre, my cover designer, when she designed the cover for that book, she put some things on the cover that she told me were now our brand.
Oh, well, there.
And she said, she had a subtitle, An Adventuring Morrow Suspense. And I said, why that? And she said, we're claiming the territory. So if you ever write another one and turn this into a series, we have that already.
That's perfect.
And so since she said that, I decided I should probably write another one.
Well, there you go.
So that one's coming out in September.
That's exciting. Does that mean you also get to cross the pond again to do more research for future books?
Yes, indeed. I will be going in July. 39 days. I fly out in 39 days.
Wow.
Yes, I'm counting.
Well, that's wonderful. Good. Well, get a copy of The Springs. It is a wonderful read. You'll recognize some of these people, whether you live in Maine or anywhere, because they are us. And it's a wonderful portrait of life in a small town and how people help each other and come to terms with what life has dealt them. And great to see you again.
Great to see you. Maybe you'll let me come back when the Adventuring book comes in.
As they say at the end of the school year, see you in September.
That sounds grand to me.
There we go. Thank you, Anna.
All right. Thanks a bunch, Rich.